So, I guess the the purpose of this shiur, I'm not sure what people came to hear. If this is not going to be a collection of redlach on the Haggadah, I hope you weren't expecting that. That is not so difficult to come across. There's no Yis Farm that will give that to you. I was trying to, I was going through the Haggadah today and looking up the various farm, and you know, when you're trying to relate to children for sure, even adults, and you know, a Avart has its place for sure, and Derecha, I think you can, if you have older children, you can rely on your children to supply with the Avarts. They come fully prepared, and otherwise you can look at your own notes that you might have still. But every piece of the Haggadah, every single part of it, and this includes even those parts that we say at high speed, all those drushes, really each part of it is emphasizing another Yisoid in Amunah, which obviously pertains to Yitzias Mitzrayim, but also has a very practical role in our daily life. And while I'm not saying that you should focus on all of them, because I don't think, it's unlikely you'll have an audience if you get too far, but it's very important to focus on some of them, because the point of the Haggadah really is to inculcate the Yisaitis HaAmunah that you know, we all believe in, but we don't always talk about them. And now is the time to talk about them. You know, sometimes by a Shabbos table we'll say a Vart, we'll emphasize a point, but we won't discuss them. We won't discuss the Yisaitis HaAmunah, the real simple, basic points that we live with. And almost every aspect of our Amunah is brought out at some point or another in the Haggadah. And you can choose anywhere, and each person will have their own method of relating to your children, relating to your guests, and relating to the people around you, how to give this over. But it's important not to miss out on that. Everything has its place, you know. The stories have their place, and the vedlach have their place, and you know, making a, acting it out, and etc. All that is important. But it's also important to see that you take the opportunity to actually stress and explain very simply what the Yisaitis HaAmunah are. So I wanted to go through the Haggadah and just demonstrate different places where we see the basic Yisaitis HaAmunah over here. We have right away, the Haggadah begins with Yachatz and with Karpas. Now the first, also an important point to realize is that if you want to encourage questions, a good way to encourage questions is by asking them yourself. I find more than anything else, if you ask a question, then people tend to throw back another question. It's a very Jewish trait. You answer a question with a question. What it means is basically, if you ask a question, it gets people to start thinking. And they say, you know, this truly doesn't make sense. So asking lots of questions, even if you don't have the answers, might be a little frustrating sometimes, but it does cause people to start thinking and paying attention to what you're saying. You know, does this make sense or doesn't make sense? So we do Yachatz. And the question that should come to mind is, why are we doing Yachatz? Why is it necessary to break the middle matzah? True, we have to save part for Afikoman, but that can be accomplished easily by saving a part for Afikoman. Why do we need to break it in half? Why do we have to do it right in the beginning of the Seder? Now, the reason why we have to do it, this is Pasha Pshat, the reason why we do that is because matzah needs to be Lachem Oini. Lachem Oini, and a Lachem Oini is a broken matzah. Now, why is Lachem Oini a broken matzah necessarily? Why would a poor man, whatever bread he has, why is it necessarily a broken piece of bread? So it's interesting, Pshat, this is a Maril, Rishon says this, because a poor man saves his bread. He doesn't eat all of it, because he doesn't know what he's going to have tomorrow. So he saves what he has in order, he will never eat the whole bread. If this is one loaf of bread, he will only eat half of it, and the other half he'll put away. So he'll never eat more than a half a piece of bread. Now, it's a very basic human nature to do that. And we, Baruch Hashem, have enough food and we don't need to do that. And it's something that's, it's the plethora of food that we have, that bracha that we have, is something which is forgotten in this, in our day and age. We don't even appreciate that we have enough food. We don't have to do what they did in Europe. We don't have to do what they did in Russia. Just to appreciate the fact that we don't have food. We don't have to worry about what are we going to eat tomorrow. And that's a simple lesson that is, we have the opportunity to just communicate when we're doing yachatz. We're doing yachatz to remind ourselves that we had a point where we didn't have, we were in Mitzrayim and our food was limited. We had that point not so long ago during the war years when people did do exactly that. They set, they apportioned and they rationed off their food to whatever little they had. And that's a siman of an ani that doesn't know what to do, doesn't know what food will have and where his food will come from. And we're trying to remind ourselves that we were in that situation. And it's something that's relatable. Let me relate to that. This will demonstrate itself again and again in the Haggadah, but it's an important, also another important point, is that the Haggadah is divided, the matzah in the Haggadah, this lachem sha'ayinu nalav dvaram harbe, is divided up. Beginning of Haggadah to end of the Haggadah. The beginning of the Haggadah, the matzah is lachem ayni, which means it's to remind us of the matzah we're eating as slaves. The end of the Haggadah, we then seg into the matzah that we came out as ge'ulim, which signified our ge'ula because it was baked so quickly, because we were in a rush to get out. And it's the matzah that we eat derech cheres, we eat it b'haseba. And there's two halves to that. There's that matzah and there's this matzah. And there's the nice vart from the Chassam Sefer. Why is it we break this matzah and then we hide half of it? The afikaimim. Well, not we, but the children. They make a whole business of hiding half of it, but why, it's a clear, it's basically a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that that's what needs to be done. The afikaimen needs to be hidden away, and he says that this signifies that that is the way the geula works. The geula half is hidden when you're still in the first half. But in your first half of the seder, you're in the half of the seder with the lachem ayni matzah. So then the lachem cheres matzah, the matzah which is represented afikaimen matzah, that's hidden away, because we don't even have a concept of that while we're still in Galus, which is very similar to our situation in Galus now as well. That while we're in Galus, we can't even fathom what the geula is going to be like, and it's almost impossible for us to fathom the geula even being possible, given the way we're living and the situation we're locked into over here in Galus. It's so hard for us to imagine the miraculous nature of what the geula will be. And that's the way it worked in Mitzrayim as well. There was lachem ayni, and while there was lachem ayni, there was no lachem cheres. There was no concept of it. That's why it's hidden away. See, right away when we say halach ma'anya, which is the introduction to the Seder, which is a very interesting introduction, we say halach ma'ani di achala avasana ba'arad in Mitzrayim. This is the lachem ayni that we ate in Mitzrayim, so referring to the past. We're extending invitation to everybody around us. We're referring to the present, inviting everybody to take part of the Seder. And then we say, we refer to the future. We're saying a tefillah HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should be zeichet to the Geula. And the whole Haggadah, and this is, Rishayim say this, the Rosh says this, and in the midst of Anoich Hashem Lakecha Shoy Tzisich Meretz Mitzrayim, that the emuna in Yetzias Mitzrayim, and I've spoken about this once on Shabbos, is there to give you the emuna that we're going to have a geula hasida as well. And we see we start the Haggadah with that, Ashat Tahach Lashon Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. We end the Haggadah with Lashon Haba Yerushalayim, and we the middle of the Haggadah as well, when we say the Brach of Asher Ga'olanu, which divides the first half of the Haggadah from the second half of the Haggadah. We say the same thing in the Nusach of that bracha. We say, Kein Hashem Aleikeinu Velekev Eseinu Yagieinu L'mayadim V'lurgaram Acherim Habayim V'kirseinu L'shalayim Sameichim V'vinyan Yirach. We should be Sameach, happy in the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, V'sasim of Aydasach, V'noichal Sham, and we should be Zeichet to eat over there, and has Zvachim and Apsachim. This year you say, second day, and Apsachim and Zvachim perhaps. So we constantly mention that what we're all this Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is to bring us to the Amunah in the Geula Asida, in Lashana Haba of Yerushalayim. And it's important to stress, and you know, this is true really for the whole Haggadah, to make things as realistic as possible and as relatable as possible. You know, when we speak in the middle of the Haggadah, that you know the difficulty that Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, and it says that Me'olam Lebarach Eved Mitzrayim, from the time of Mitzrayim's inception, the beginning of time until the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, a single Eved didn't escape Mitzrayim. That's a very strong, that's a very powerful claim. That was many, many, many years, you know, of the thousands of years, of 2,000 years or so. 2,400 years, actually, that Mitzrayim was around, I guess it was 1,400 years that Mitzrayim was around, and an Eved never escaped Mitzrayim. And the Midrashim say that they had 24 safeguards in place to make sure that an Eved won't escape Mitzrayim. So I was thinking of a modern-day example. It would be like Fort Knox. So I looked up online, what is the safety net around Fort Knox? So it's Barak 24. They have, you know, a physical fence around the outer perimeter. I didn't put it down. Then they have alarms, video cameras, barbed wire, electric fence, guards, a full army unit, a few Apache, that's how it's pronounced, helicopters. Then there's this huge, there's this fortress, you know, above ground. But that's just to get through that. Then you get below ground, the walls of the vault. There's a number of walls. The thinner ones are 21 inches thick. They weigh 22 tons. Then they're impervious to any blast. The thicker ones are 25 inches thick. It sounds like a nuclear blast wouldn't blow it open. And so there's that amount of security to just protect that gold. That's there are 24. So just to give you a practical example of like what it means to have that much safeguards in place. Mitzrayim must have had something along those lines if they prevented, in their whole history, up to Yetzias Mitzrayim, not a single Eved was able to escape. So you understand that the Yidden were in that situation. There was no possible way to imagine the Geula. They were in a situation where, historically speaking, for 1,000 years, no one had successfully escaped Mitzrayim. It was a sheer impossibility. The same as you would understand as yourself, as an untrained individual trying to break into Fort Knox. You wouldn't make it past the first fence. No one had successfully made it out. So for them to be able to conceive, have a geula was beyond comprehension. It was impossible. It wasn't something that was impossible to believe. And yet it happened, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it happen. It's as difficult for us to understand the geula that will happen to us and will change over the whole nature of the world as Yetzias Mitzrayim made such a tremendous change in the whole course of history. The same change will take place when we have our geula. And it's very important to stress this somewhere in the middle of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim to make this point that it's as difficult as the situation seems. And it's something on a personal level that we experience often. When a person is sick, it's almost impossible to imagine. What was it like when I was well? You know, like in the middle of the winter, it's hard to imagine the summer. And then when you're well, it's hard for you to relate what it was like when you were sick. We tend to live in the stage we're in, and it's hard for us to visualize the other one. But it's very important that we do. That very much, that's also the chiyuv, the chayav adam liras atzmoy. And we say when we say Avadim Hayinu, we say Yilu Ha'itzeh Kadosh Baruch Hu Asaveseni Mitzrayim Hayanu Vaneinu Vnevenenu Mishubadim Hayinu Lofar B'Mitzrayim Fulu Kulanu Nuchacham Kulanu Vaneinu etc. Right. So we ask the question. They ask four questions. Right. Manishtana. They asked Matzah Chametz. They asked Morer Yurakis. They asked Pamacha Shepamim Kulanu Mesuvim. Good four questions. And we give them the answer of Avadim Hayinu. So some people say it's an introduction. It's not really the answer. But the Paiskim seem to think that this is the answer. Avadim Hayinu is the answer. And if you say Avadim Hayinu, you're Yaitse. You've been Yaitse answering the questions. And how exactly does Avadim Hayinu answer the questions? So let's first talk about it. But I believe it was the Abu Darhem. see what that's who it was. No, I'm sorry, the Barbanel. The Barbanel says that the reason why Avadim Ayinu is an answer is because what Avadim Ayinu is coming to stress is that Yetzias Mitzrayim was not a historical past event. Yetzias Mitzrayim is a current event. And the reason why it's a current event is because would we have not been taken out of Mitzrayim, we would still be there. So that means currently we are at this moment benefiting from Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not like it happened thousands of years ago. Something else would have happened in the middle. We're saying no, nothing would have changed. We would have still been in Mitzrayim, which needs an explanation. We'll get to in a minute what that means. But we would have still been in Mitzrayim. We would have not gone out of there, and we would currently be in Eved. And that being the case, we need to remember both aspects. We have to know what it feels like to be in Eved, and we have to know what it feels like to be free. And that's why we do all these contradictory things during the Seder. We have matzah, which is lechem ayini. We do dip in salt water, which is keneged the time that we were slaves. And we dip in harayses. And we eat mesubin, which is the keneged the time when we went free. We need to remember both. We need to appreciate both. We need to feel both. We have to feel the time that we were slaves, and we have to feel the time that we were free in order to appreciate it, because it's a current thing. Right now, we're benefiting, this moment, we're benefiting from the fact that we're not slaves now because the Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. It's not just remembering something that happened a long time ago. And it's a difficult thing to do. Again, it's something which it benefits from trying to make it as realistic as possible. It's an interesting thing, in Halach Ma'anya, it's not an interesting thing. There's two interesting things. First of all, it's, I believe, the only part of the Haggadah that we say in Aramaic. Halach Ma'anya is Aramaic. And the other interesting thing is that we extend an invitation to guests. It seems like the wrong time to do it. You're sitting ready at your Pesach Seder. It's very nice of you to extend invitations. So, you know, you could whisper it into your Haggadah. Rabbi Yaakov Glinsky writes, he's a joke, but he says that the father says, Halach Ma'anya, call the fin, the Yesev Yechel, anybody who wants can come. So the son asks him, you never invite guests. Why are you inviting guests? He says, don't worry, when we get to Avadim Ayinu, you'll understand. So he says, Avadim Ayinu, Parah Mitzrayim, Book of Parah did. He says, I'll let everybody go. Then when he came, we said, no, only let the man. And he said, I'll let everybody go. No, I won't let the men and the women, not the children. So we learned already from Pari, this Mahalach. You say something, but you don't actually follow through. So, it's a strange thing. We're making an invitation. What are we doing over here? So the Mepharshim say that this also is a Midah of Derech Eretz, which means that we have a Rafchus. We're happy anybody could come. We'll make that announcement, you know, that anybody should come to join us by the Seder. And it's also another concept that's important to stress, that when we're teaching to our children the concept of Derech Eretz, it's a very real thing, meaning to say, we act like kings because we are kings. We act like kings because we have every aspect of Malchus about us. We represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are his shluchim in this world. We realistically, if things would be the way they're supposed to be, we would be treated like kings. And at the time when Mashiach comes, we will be treated like kings. And people will be clamoring just to get an audience with a single yid. And it says in Chazal Darshana Pasuk, which I believe is one of the haftaros of Pesach, that there'll be, I don't remember the number, but something like 24,000 Umas HaOlam grabbing on to one tzitzis of a yid in order to be able to come along with him to Eretz Yisrael, to have some ability to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the psukim say, V'haya melachem amnayich, the kings will be your servants. They'll take care of your household. They'll take care of your children. Which means that we'll be elevated to a point where it's also beyond our ability to comprehend, but it's very pashut pshat. That's exactly what it'll be like. When we're acting like kings, we're just doing a me'ein, a small remnant, a small little taste of the type of royalty that we're going to be accorded at the time that Mashiach comes. And it's what really is supposed to be, just hasn't happened yet, and Be'ez Hashem it will happen. So it's also a very important point to give over, that we're acting like Derech Eretz, we're acting like Malachim, and it's not just an act. It's a real feeling to try to impart over to the people that you have by your Seder, that this is something which is so hard for us to appreciate in the type of society we live in, you know, where the concept of royalty isn't even appreciated anymore. It's almost extinct. But it's something which will be reenacted, and the reason for it being, you know, the people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the people that have access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will be on that elevated Madrega, and everybody will want to do whatever they can to just get close to them. And that's the Ma'al of the Yid. A very important point also, to find a place in the Seder, and during the Haggadah, to emphasize, you know, the Chai Yisrael is a Goy Echad Ba'aretz. Chai Yisrael is a singular nation among the nations. It's not comparable to the Ummah Salam. It's not, we can't be compared to them. We don't do anything like them, and we do everything differently because we listen to what Hashem said. Another interesting thing, this is really what I was speaking about by the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, another reason the Mefarshim say why we start the Seder in Aramaic is because B'derech Klal, in davening also, we never say anything in Aramaic. What do we say in Aramaic? Kaddish. Why do we say Kaddish in Aramaic? Because when we say something in Aramaic, what that indicates is that we don't need any malachim to be in between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close enough to us, we can even speak Aramaic. When we want malachim to help us along, so we need to speak Lashon Kaddish. If we need to connect directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we're able to connect directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we speak Aramaic. During the time of the Seder, we start the Seder in Aramaic, and we say, Yudavin HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ashata Abdi L'shana Abba B'nei Chayrin, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very, very, very close to us at the time that we're making the Seder. Like the Zayar I mentioned during the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings his whole Pamayi Shamayla. So it's a very, very, you know, Der Hoivim, like you say, is a very elevated time, a very spiritual time. It's also something important to give over to the people by the Seder, that this is, you know, there should be a ruach, a feeling of Kedusha that permeates a Seder. And it's not always, depending, again, on the company you have, it's not always so easy to maintain that throughout the whole Seder. And it is very important that everybody feels comfortable, you know. And you know, but even so, there are definitely times that it's important to concentrate on that, to realize and to feel the Kedusha that's in the ear when we're about to start a Pesach Seder. Now, typically, what happens very often in a Seder is that people have a lot of the Retorah to say, and somehow it all gets said by Maisa Rebbe Eliezer of Yeshua, Ani Harini Kaben Shef Mishana, these Ma'amari Chazal, which were really very sort of tangential to the Seder. And then after you've spent a half hour or an hour on that first part, then when it comes to 10 Makas and all that, you're already on high speed at that point, you know, whether it's Chatzos or whether other reasons, you need to get it past. So I tried one year, I wasn't making my own Seder, but I said, you know, my wife also insisted, says, no, we'll go fast through the first part. And what ended up happening is we went fast through both. Fast through the first part and fast through the second part. So, you know, you have to draw some sort of, once you hit the gas, it's very hard to hit the brake. So you do have to find some sort of a middle ground over here. But like I said, there's really every point in the Seder, it's important not to hit the brakes and like park, because then you just lose out on the later parts of the Seder. But at the same time, it's every thing that we speak about in the Seder has a lot of meaning, a lot of depth, and there's a lot to learn from it. So, like I said, I won't spend time on that because, like, I'm sure year after year you've heard enough on those parts, so I'll move on. The Arba Banim, the Chacham Rasha Tam Shenidei Lishal, there's a lot to talk about, the Sfarim speak about it a lot, but for us, especially in a contemporary view, What's important is as follows, that it says Chacham Rasha, and the Farshim asks, it's not Chacham Rasha, it should be Rasha Tzadik. That usually would be the correct way to contrast the Rasha and Tzadik. What they say is that's not what we're discussing over here. We're not talking about someone's level spiritually. That's not the issue. If he's a tzaddik, he did mitzvahs, that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing someone's willingness to learn. A chacham is someone who's willing to learn, and a tzaddik is someone who... a chacham is someone who's willing to learn, and a rasha is someone who does not want to learn. He doesn't want to accept. But what's important here is, and I saw some farshim saying that really, nowadays we should have a fifth son. And a fifth son is a person who's not interested at all. He has no interest. So Rav Moshe says, beautiful pshat, he says, the pasuk that the Rasha, these four banim, Chacham, Rasha, Tam, and Sheni De'Elisha, each one is represented by a pasuk in the Torah. It says, Ahayi Kishalcha Bincha, it says, mentions four times in the Torah that your son will be asking you questions. And with the first time it's mentioned in Parashas Bayit, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu told him, Ahayi Kishalcha Bincha, the whole pasuk. And it says, the Klal Yisrael bowed and they prostrated themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rashi says, why? Because they wanted to give Hadar. They wanted to give thanks. Why do they want to give thanks? Well, first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu told them they're going to have children. And secondly, because he told them they're going to get saved. They're going to have a geula. So Rav Moshe asks, it happens to be that pasuk is the pasuk of the Ben Rasha. And it seems a little odd that they're bowing down and prostrating themselves and giving Shvach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he told them they're going to have a Ben Rasha. It seems like a strange thing. He says, no. He says, you'll have a Ben Rasha, that's a fact of life. You can't control something like that. That'll always happen. But the Besura was, the Ben Rasha is going to come to the Seder. He's going to be interested. He'll participate. And that is something to give Shvach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If as long as they're participating, as long as your children are participating, that's a whole different story. Then there's a hope that next year things will be different. So Vart from Meir Pramil Shlam, the famous rabbi, and he said that the fact is that there's a new Haggadah published every year, at least, if not more. I think the Haggadah is, historically speaking, the one Jewish book that has the most Svarim published about it. It's in the thousands. More than any other book at all. So he said, why is that necessary? So he says, the Rasha from last year is already a tzaddik this year. You need to have a new Haggadah. So anyway, that's the point that Rav Moshe is making. That the banim we're talking about are banim that are interested. And there's a fifth son that's not interested at all. He doesn't even come into mention. But the point being that's of the primary importance that we're trying to do during the Seder, and that is to have everybody engaged and have everybody involved. And that's our focus as... That's what the main focus we have in the Seder is to keep everybody engaged and keep everybody involved and keep everybody interested. And that should be the focus above everything else. And in order to do that, and the way to do that, very simply, is to make it a atmosphere that encourages questions, and that when the children do participate, you show them how happy you are that they're participating. When people do participate, you show them the nachas ruach you're getting, the enjoyment you're having from everybody's participation. And whether they're asking the questions or they're saying the answers or they're saying the different Torah, it doesn't make any difference. It's the participation that counts. And it's the enjoyment you're showing at their participation that's the main thing. Sometimes it becomes a little stressful, you know, by a Seder because it's late, you're tired, we're tired, the women are certainly tired and so on and so forth. And that's all 100% understandable and it's normal. Funny story, David Lapian, a grandson of Eli Lapian, was a Shiva in the Flatbush many years, and I heard him saying this story. He said that his grandfather Eli Lapian was old already. He lived in Rechasim, that's in the north part of Eretz Yisrael, Haifa, near Haifa, and he was very, very old, and he was supposed to come to his daughter who lived in Yerushalayim for the Seder. And then, like 2 days before Pesach, he decided he's too weak to travel. So they were going to have to make the Seder by him in Rechasim. But his whole house wasn't clean for Pesach, and nothing was prepared, nothing was ready. So his daughter traveled to his house, and she worked straight for 36 hours, cleaning the whole house, making the house ready, a kashal of Pesach, cooking the food, doing everything. Mamash 36 hours straight, she didn't sleep. And he said he was by the Seder. Rav Apian was there by the Seder as well. He said that Rav Apian sat down to make Kiddush, and he looks around, he looks, saw his daughter, and he saw her eyes. He says he made it to Shulchan Aruch in 15 minutes. He wasn't. He says the mitzvah of Sipur Tzvi Mitzrayim is important, but not on Yemes Cheshbon. He said he made it to the Yerushalayim. So, you know, everybody's entitled to be human, but in Kozeh, it's important to make a Gishmaka atmosphere by the Seder. So this is the main, one of the big chiyuvim of Sipur Tzvi Mitzrayim is to be maschal b'gnus, to begin with what was, how bad we could have been, and how good we are now. It's an interesting thing. I was just reading that many veterans have a practice, they have a holiday called Alive Day. Veterans that were injured, that are very often, you know, a very severe injury, like a loss of limb and other severe injuries, they celebrate that day as Alive Day. In other words, that is the day that even though they were so injured, they lived, and they were able to survive. And the nekuda of Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Hayah V'Seinu is that we need to, if we want to appreciate what we have to appreciate what could have been. And this is the nekuda where, when we say that Ilu Lo Hayitzeinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Misham, Mishubad Hayinu L'Par B'Mitzrayim. So your children will ask you, what do you mean we're Mishubad L'Par B'Mitzrayim? Par is long dead, and there is no Par anymore. Par is passed on from existence for 1,000 years. There aren't any pharaohs anymore. But what it means is, simply put, is that we would have become a Mitzri. If we would have stayed there, would have become an Egyptian. And we would have passed out of existence. It would have not been a Klal Yisrael. It wouldn't have been a nation. We wouldn't have had an identity. And that's what we're trying to demonstrate, what it means that we could have just stayed the same, and we could have just been a non-Jew like any other non-Jew, a Mitzri like any other Mitzri. And, you know, what we're faced with, what's going on now in the Arab world, that's not nothing to be excited about. You know, we could have ended up in that boat to be like that. And instead, we were taken by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and given the opportunity to be a Yidden, to serve Him. And how lucky we are just for that, just to be different type of people, just to be Yidden. And this is also a place where you can use the opportunity to emphasize what it means to be a Yidden. How different we are, and how different we lead our lives, and how different, how much importance there are that we give to values, how much happier we are. And that's also something also very important, especially, you know, in the times that we live in, to explain that we are much happier people because we live the way we live. And while it may seem that the people who do whatever they want and they take advantage of every type of, you know, or every desire they have, and they have nothing that holds them back, they are happy, the truth shows itself time and time and again that that's not the case. They're actually very unhappy, very unfulfilled, very, very sad. There are people that you think are on top of the world, that the world perceives them as being on top of the world, as, you know, having everything, having fame, having power, having popularity, many times committed suicide. They are obviously not happy. It seems they are, but they aren't. Also, a very important insight to emphasize that we're happy because we have Torah mitzvahs. Another important thing to bring out is that we talk about Avraham Avinu, and this is taka something which children are very familiar with, but it's important to realize that Avraham Avinu was the first Baal Shuva, right? He started with nothing. He was an Avid Avodah Zarah. He was the son of an Avid Avodah Zarah, and he was able to surpass all that, see past all that, and choose HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped him. And it's an important point to bring out, that he, from his own, with all the influence that everything around him was, and the amount of pressures that were put on him to give up Yiddishkeit and not to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he withstood that. And he was strong and still kept to all the nekudas of the Amunah. That's the point that we're trying to say. The Ekes Avichem is Avraham Me'ir HaNar. It's important also to spend a minute who Avraham Avinu was. what he signifies, what he shows us, the ability to stand against the tide, what it is, the ability to not care what everybody else is thinking. We pick up the kais and we say and when we say the he refers to the haftacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avraham Avinu. This haftacha that he'll always be with us is what has been protecting us from generation after generation. And we say not only one, but every generation they're trying to destroy us. And we bring a proof from Lavan Arami. The proof from Lavan Arami, the Mepharshim say, I believe it is the Golnagayin, actually. The Golnagayin says that the proof from Lavan Arami is actually something which is very, very relevant to us today as well. Lavan Arami had every reason to love Yaakov Avinu. He was his uncle. He was his father-in-law. His grandchildren were, Yaakov Avinu's children were his grandchildren. Yaakov Avinu's wife was his daughter's. He was his employee. He was a very faithful employee. He had every single reason in the world to love him, and he even made himself seem as if he loved him. But in truth, he didn't. And in truth, as soon as he had the opportunity, as soon as things weren't going his way, he was ready to kill him. And what the Haggadah is trying to tell you is that's the way it is always. And that's the way it is right now. It might seem like it's not like that, but that is really the way it is. Now, you don't want to scare anybody. But it's important for us to understand that, to give over that message that Beis HaLevi used to say, and it seems very extreme, but it's becoming more and more real. He said that if you meet a guy on the street and he doesn't kill you, he's either lazy or stupid. That's the Beis HaLevi said. And for us, you know, in our day, it's very hard to relate to that. But, you know, if you walk in the streets of France, it might become a little bit more realistic. You walk around in some other parts of the world, it becomes very, very, very real. And that's really all it is. And it's important to understand that we're living in a place with the semblance of comfort and the semblance of safety, and we have it. You know, and again, like, there's no need to scare anybody, but the Goyim really do hate us. And, you know, it's a very thin line that gets crossed once something goes wrong, and it all comes out. And it's important for us to understand also, why is it that they hate us so much? Why do non-Jews hate Yidden that much? What is it about us? What gets them so upset? And the typical thinking always was, it's because we're so different. But we've known and we've seen, historically speaking, that's not true. On the contrary, the more Yidden try to put themselves into the society, the more they try to infiltrate the various levels of society and become bankers and become prestigious, it made things much worse. It made the non-Jews even that much more furious and thinking that the Jews are taking over everything. So obviously it's not the being different that bothered them, it's something else. And, you know what, Hitler himself, I hate to quote him, but he himself wrote in his famous book, is that the Jews are the conscience of the world. And that's why he hated them. The Jews represent something. They represent an MS, they represent a truth, an undeniable truth that everybody would like to deny, but they realize they can't. And the Yidden are that beacon of light that prevents everybody, all the non-Jews, from just enjoying themselves, so to speak, to do whatever it is that they want to do. There is one, the level of consciences that the Yidden represent. We show that, no, there is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and there is going to be a point when there's going to be a reckoning, and there is going to be a point where the truth is going to come out, and the point of this world will be displayed to everybody. And we represent that. And we live like that. And we continue to live like that throughout the generations. And that's something that they cannot and will not have the ability to live with. So it's specifically because we are Yidden, and specifically because we are Shem Riteria Mitzvahs, and because we're so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's, I guess, a simple form of a jealousy, that they can't, they whether consciously or unconsciously, whether it's something that has been taught throughout the generations of Christianity, whatever the cause of it is, but it's a fact. They can't live together with Jews. They can't, they aren't able to they aren't able to accept the existence of a yid. And the only thing that's saving us, the only thing that is protecting us, is v'hi sham d'la v'sein v'lanu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects us from generation after generation. There's a famous vart that we say, halu es Hashem kol gayim, shabuchu kol ha'umim. We say in halu. We say, why is it halu Hashem kol gayim? Why would the gayim specifically give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And they say that a non-Jew asked the Netziv this question. And he said that actually, he says, we don't even know to appreciate everything you're planning to do. You're the ones who know everything you've tried and everything you've plotted and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has thwarted. You're the ones that are going to give howl the lasid lavai that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did so much hatava to us. You're the only ones who really truly appreciate it. Now, we at this point come to the many different drushes that are in the Haggadah. There's Vayered Mitzrayim, Vayogar Sham, Vimseim Ha'at, etc., one after another. So I just want to quickly go through them just to show that each one demonstrates a very important nekuda in Amuna, which again, you can take one, you can take all, you can take some, but you can use it as a springboard to discuss the concepts of Amuna which are so central to us. Vayered Mitzrayim, Anus Al Pi Hadibur. Anus Al Pi Hadibur is a very, very big insight. And it means that we don't have control of where we go. We don't have control of where we end up. We would like to think we do. We would like to think we make choices. We would like to think we have a bechira to determine where we should end up, what we should do, what sort of job we get, but we don't. We don't have any of that. And it seems to us sometimes that we do, but in retrospect, we look back and we realize that it really was out of our control. And this is a very big yisayi. That's why we're mentioning it. The reason why we're saying it is to demonstrate to us that we also don't have control of where we end up. Everywhere we go on the Salpi Hadibur. And it's important to realize that, and to work with that, and to accept it, and to utilize every opportunity that Kadosh Baruch Hu puts you in, and realize he's doing it for your good, and he's doing it for your greater good. We say, also, a very important insight, similar to what I was saying previously, That was Yaakov Avinu's approach, not to be Mishtakei and Mitzrayim, to keep separate, not to become comfortable over there, which is something also important for us, something which the Chafetz Chaim say time and time and again. You know, he didn't buy furniture, he didn't buy too many possessions, he's just passing through. And it's not an easy thing to relate to, but it's something that every so often we have to remind ourselves. And this is also, that's the point of Yaakov Avinu Mishtakei Mitzrayim. This is not our place. We don't belong over here. America is great. And we appreciate every minute we have here. It's a wonderful place. It's free, and we can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this is not the place we want to be. This is not our place. We want to be in Eretz Yisrael. We want to be in an Eretz Yisrael B'Asad Lave with a Beis HaMikdash and with Mashiach and with freedom. That's the way we want to be. This is not where we want to be. We then say, "Vayhi Sham L'Goy, L'Amash HaYisrael Mitzuyanim Sham." So the Pashup Shat and Kal Yisrael Hayim Mitzuyanim Sham, they were separate, and it was obvious that they were separate. They dressed differently, they called themselves differently, and they spoke differently. Also, something which attributed to the unity of Kal Yisrael, it attributed to the identity of Kal Yisrael, and it's something which is the main thing and the primary thing which ensures that Kal Yisrael will continue, is that we stay separate, we stay apart. It's also, you can mention, I like to do that. There's a famous, I'm sure you're familiar with it, this quote from Mark Twain. Also, it's a beautiful point to be made at some point, also during the Haggadah, it could be made over here as well. I'll just read it off too quickly. He said, if statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous, dim puff of stardust, lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of, but he is heard of. Has always been heard of. He's as prominent on the planet as any other people, and his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world's list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and abstruse learning is also way out of proportion to the weakness of his numbers. He has made a marvelous fight in this world, in all the ages, and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, and then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed, made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other people have sprung up, held their torch high for a time, but it burned out. And they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? Also a very, very important point to make during the Seder, that we have survived. We have survived all this year, these years. We've been beaten down, and we've continued to survive. We were b'mesei'at, and we became rav. We were b'mesei'at again. There was a Spanish Inquisition, and there was a Holocaust, and again we become rav. Also, very important point to stress during the Seder, that we continuously, by all accounts, should not exist anymore. By all statistics, should not be in existence, and we should not represent anything. And no one should have ever heard of us, and yet we have. And yet we do. That's also a very important point. We'll take a few minutes to we'll skip ahead a little bit, but if you're getting the idea, likewise, you know, we go on to Vanitzak al Hashem Elokei Aviseinu, also a very, very central point in Haggadah. Nothing moves in this world without tefillah. It was already the case came. The Kodesh Baruch Hu had to take us out of Mitzrayim. He had promised the others. Everything was in place. Nothing would have happened without Vanitzak al Hashem Elokei Aviseinu. Nothing would have moved. Nothing in this world moves without tefillah. Tefillah is essential to everything. Very important point. You can't underestimate the power of tefillah, the koyach tefillah. It works, and it always works. And a lot of times, that's all that's necessary. Because what all he's waiting for is the tefillah to be in place, and then he'll move everything else forward. When you finally get to the Makkos, so, like I said, typically at this point you're already going very high speed, but if you try to, you know, figure out your time and proportion it properly to leave yourself some time to talk about that Sarah Makkos, then you can look in the Midrashim. There's many, many beautiful Midrashim. And it was giving you an example where you can try to make it real, you know, to try to make the children relate to what the Nisim of the Makkos were. And Marshall, it says that the Kinim were 2 amas high. So that's small share, we'll go with Chaim Noah's share. That's 3 feet. So that means you're up to here in Kinim. Now these weren't little itsy bitsy guys. It says in the Medrash they were the size of a Beis Tarnagolos. Each louse was the size of a chicken egg. So I looked online for a picture of a louse enlarged. I think you'd run the other way if you saw one of these guys. That's a lice the size of a chicken egg. And the other shita in Chazal is that it was the size of a goose egg. That's a very scary critter. And they were up to their necks in this. So, you know, you can look for different ways, creative ways, to make it very realistic. We, Baruch Hashem, have a lot of technology now. It's not a lot easier. It also... It says that the Tzardeya, it's the same thing by Tzardeya and the Arab. It says that the Tzardeya was Becha, Ba'amecha, Ba'amasharesecha, Tanrecha. The Medrash says in both places that the order was Dafka, which means we had these millions of Tzardeya, but they didn't just spread out, you know, as would be natural for frogs to do, to, you know, spread out randomly throughout the whole city. They had a very clear direction and a very clear destination in mind. First was Becha, which means he had a whole army of Tzfardim, I don't know how many feet thick, marching up the main drag of Mitzrayim to go to Pari's palace. And they weren't bothering anything. So the same thing by Arav. The whole Arvuvia, all the animals, with everything with them, didn't scatter around all Mitzrayim. They had a direction, a very specific direction. Everybody was standing watching the parade and went to Pari. It took over his palace. Then they had another place that they went. Then they spread out to Avodecha, to his immediate servants. And then it spread out to Mishareisecha, Unu Tanerecha. It was with a purpose. Every point, there was nothing that was natural about any aspect of the Nais, any aspect of the Makkah. That Sephardim didn't act like frogs in any shape, form, or feel. They didn't sound like frogs, they didn't act like frogs. They made a racket, a very controlled and a very loud racket, which drove the Mitzrim crazy. And you could try to imagine the type of noise that they created. I don't know if anybody has ever had a cricket infestation in their house. It can truly drive you crazy. Truly drive you sugar, and it's not even so loud, but it's incessant. And just when you think if they stop, they start again. It's noise and noise and noise and noise. And it says in Chazal that was a big chelik of the einesh that the Mitzrim were getting, was the noise that these the Tzfarim were creating. You can look, there's you know, the book Let My Nation Go, even though it's English, even though it's written like a novel, but he writes over many, many Midrashim in English. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. There's a lot to take from there. And again, it's important to try to find a way to make it real, to make something they can relate to, you know, to make sizes, to make comparisons. The last nekuda that we say in the Haggadah, and this is also from the big Yisaitis in our Amuna, is Dayenu. And what Dayenu and then Halal is that the point of Yitzias Mitzrayim is to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not just the regular thanks, but each point. Don't leave out a prat. Well, we're going to examine each aspect, what it will be with it, what it will be without it. Then we have to do the same thing for all the hatava, all the good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us. We have to examine each aspect of it, each child that we have, everything that we have in physical and in wealth, everything we have. And we have cars, and we have a place to live, and we have a wife, and we have children, and we have parnasam. Every aspect of it, every detail of it, has to be examined separately, and we have to say Dayenu. Each one would be enough to give shvach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're so happy for the next one. That's the nekuda that the Haggadah is coming to teach us in Kama Malas Tevis Amakam Aleinu, and it's a beautiful practice that many people have adopted. I know the Rav Simcha Bunim Cohen in Lakewood, he advises this a lot, and it's a beautiful thing to do. People do this every Friday night, that they take the opportunity to go around the table and ask each child or each member to say something they're thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. And sometimes they'll be imaginative, sometimes they'll be boring, you know, they'll say, okay, I'm so thankful I have soda, whatever, you know. But it's a beautiful way to get into the habit of just picking something to be thankful and realize that you have to be thankful for it. That's the message of Kama Malas Tavis Lamachayim Aleinu. Have a good job, everybody.